evening and welcome back to another show and week of the Alaska Identity Project. My name is Adrian Lopez, broadcasting here on KTOO News Juneau, 104.3 in Alaska's capital city. Stay tuned in the next hour as I interview some exciting guests. First off, I'll have Brandon Smith, Brewing Operations Manager, and Ashley Johnston, Communications Manager of Alaskan Brewing Company, located right here in Juneau, Alaska. Then in the second part of the program, I'll be talking with Deb Spencer, owner of Cross Sound Seafoods and Scow Girls Rule, also known as Shoreline Scow, an all-female floating fish processing operation near Pelican, Alaska. Remember, you can participate in the Alaska Identity Project by writing in with your questions and asking the guests anything you want. If you're out there and you want to ask something on Facebook, you can post on the wall. So find it on Facebook and like it. Or you can also go to Twitter at Alaska ID Project and follow me there with the weekly updates for the guests that will be on every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KTOO News. Well, in the studio tonight, we've got Brandon and Ashley. Thanks for coming on, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Participating in the Alaska Identity Project. Ashley, Communications Manager, correct?
Yeah.
Let's just get started. Of course, I always like to start with the background of your company, your organization, Alaskan Brewing, and it's been around 25 years, so maybe just give us some history.
Yeah, it has. 25 years. It's our silver anniversary, and we're pretty darn proud of it. The Alaskan Brewing Company was founded by a husband and wife couple, Marcy and Jeff Larson, who are a big part of the Juneau community. In 1986, obviously the planning and fundraising started well before that, but Marcy and Jeff were living in Juneau. Jeff was a chemical engineer by trade, working for the gold mine when it closed, and they kind of, started as a joke, but then led, was a great way for them to turn their passion into a career and started the brewery. 1985 we were in the midst of a recession, and they wanted to start a capital-intensive business in a town with no roads leading in or out.
So no roads in Juneau for those of you out there.
Exactly. And there's a lot of raw materials that go into making and brewing beer. So they were politely declined by the local financial institutions for funding. So they actually went door to door and found 88 investors willing to invest small sums to be a part of it. So it's very much a community-based business. It started that way, and it is today.
Wow.
When they started, they thought that success, true success as a brewery would be about 5,000 barrels. A barrel is 31 gallons. But just this year, we think we'll get close to 125,000 to 130,000 barrels of beer. So we're doing all right.
That's pretty impressive. So, and through the years, you guys have increased your staff there. How many people work at the brewery here?
It changes a little bit seasonally, but I think in Juneau we have just under 70 people.
Okay.
And then we have some sales representatives that work in our states down south where we distribute our beer.
Okay. So they were from here, and they decided to stay here, even though it might be a little bit more of a cost to the company to be in Juneau.
That Marcy and Jeff?
They
were actually from back east and made the pilgrimage to the Northwest. But yes, it's funny. We get that question all the time. Wouldn't it be more cost effective? Why don't you just build a brewery in Seattle or something? But it says Alaskan on the label, and we get to make beer in one of the most beautiful places, and it's going to stay that way.
Mm. Yeah, it must be. An advantage for attracting good talent, too, to a beautiful place like to Juneau. Brandon, does that mean you're coming from somewhere else?
I was from back east as
From
well.
Back east, okay. Yep. And you came here for the job as brewing operations manager.
Mm.
Okay.
That's right.
Well, what I've always liked, and I've seen this since I got to Juneau a few months ago, was this piece about sustainability, because that's kind of my background, and that you guys are one of the first breweries in the country to have this system in place. So I was going to ask you to explain a little bit more about what this means to be sustainable for Alaska Brewing.
Well, as Ashley mentioned, we are we're very lucky to live in the place that we live in, and all the people that work at the brewery realize that our natural backdrop really frames a lot of what we do. So sustainability and social responsibility kind of go to the very core of what Jeff and Marcy started and is ingrained in everyone that worked there. So that's one side of it. The other side is that sustainability and environmental responsibility often are good business.
Yes,
so it's not just doing things because it's the right thing to do. The things that we've done, and I'll explain a few of them in a minute, they go directly to our bottom line. So they're probably things that we would have done anyway. But we also, they have the additional facet of things that we want to do because they are sustainable practices. So
That's awesome.
So being in Alaska and manufacturing a product in Alaska presents a lot of challenges that people don't have in the lower 48. We have to ship all of our raw materials up on a barge that takes a week, and then they go and they come to Seattle by truck, of course, and then we ship everything back on a barge down south. So not just the shipping costs, but how do we get our materials up and how do we get rid of our byproducts? Mm-hmm. These are things that other breweries really don't have issues dealing with. A few things that I wanted to mention. Our CO2 reclamation system is the first one that we really got into. And just a little bit of background, carbon dioxide, or CO2, is used at a number of places in a brewery. It's used to carbonate beer. It's used to pressurize tanks. There's just a lot of uses for it. Typically, industrial CO2 comes from either burning fossil fuels or as a byproduct from other manufacturing industries. Mm-hmm. And that's where most breweries get their CO2. They call up the gas company and they bring them a big thing of CO2. It's great. It just so happens that one of the big byproducts of brewing beer is carbon dioxide. So at some point, you get to the point where you're saying, hey, we're spending a lot on CO2, and because these tanks are pressurized and really cold, you end up losing half to the atmosphere on the trip up anyway.
Wow.
So in 1998, finally, there was the breaking point of, this is silly. We're sending all this CO2 into the atmosphere, and then we're buying more, and we're not even getting all that we pay for. So in 1998, the brewery installed the first CO2 reclamation and purification system, which captures all of the CO2 off these processing tanks and purifies it, liquefies it, and then we have a big storage tank of CO2 that we made ourselves. And then when we need it, it re-vaporized and sent to wherever it needs to be. So we've been self-sufficient on carbon dioxide since then. Since 1998.
Wow.
So we're very proud of
it.
Completely self-sufficient. We don't buy it.
Amazing.
And we even make a little more than we need to. So,
give it to your friends.
Yeah. So we're very proud of that.
Now, where did you first hear the system? Sorry, Brandon.
It was before my time.
Okay.
But it's something that's a little more common in Europe.
Yeah.
Europe tends to lead the charge, especially in terms of breweries, in terms of environmental and environmental innovation, particularly because they are so resource limited.
Mm-hmm.
So the technology existed well before we put our system in, but we were the first craft brewery in the country to do it, again, because being in Alaska, just the driving force of why we needed to do that.
Craft brewery? Can you define that real quick?
A craft brewery? How do we define a craft brewery?
It depends on who you ask. It's kind of a moving target. But
all right. Today, what's the definition? a small artisanal.
Basically, artisanal has to be a certain percent of the beer made has to be all malt ingredients or without adjunct. The definition by our trade association has been related to barrelage as in under 2 million barrels, but that recently changed as well. So basically small, smaller, handcrafted and malt-based.
Okay, that's good.
And since we put our system in the last few years, Sierra Nevada has put one in. And I believe New Belgium also has just put one in. But we were the first ones in the country to do it. And there was a pretty big gap of time until other breweries finally said it makes sense for us. It made sense for us because we saved a lot of money and we kept the CO2 out of the atmosphere. Of course, eventually it makes it back into the atmosphere, but we don't need to discuss that. So,
okay. And you have some other systems in place,
yeah, I do,
too.
And I'll just briefly talk about those.
Yeah.
When I first got here in 2007, we were working on a new piece of brewing equipment that it's called a mash filter press. And again, the Europeans kind of led the charge on this. It's all over the place in the rest of the world. But we were the first craft brewery in the country, again, to put this in. And basically what it does is it replaces an older technology in the brewing process. And without going into too much detail, what the net effect for us was to brew the same volume of beer, we now use 6 to 7% less malt. We use 1 million gallons a year less water, plus we save the fuel needed to heat that water. And we save a lot of oil because of various things associated with the process. If you're talking sustainability, what is sustainability but making less of an impact, using less to do the same thing and make a higher quality product? So we're very excited about that. And as a side benefit, it enabled us to increase our capacity without building more bricks and mortar. So you could kind of stretch the analogy of saying, well, we didn't have to develop new land and use all these resources to build new bricks and mortar because we expanded in the exact spot we were in.
Yeah.
So, Wow. We're very proud of that one. And then something that you and I have talked about is our new spent grain boiler. A couple years ago, one of our major byproducts of the brewing process is spent grain.
Okay.
Once we get all the good stuff out of it that the yeast then ferments, we have all this stuff left over. Down south, farmers love it. It's great cattle feed, so breweries can get rid of it for free. Well, it's been a long time since we had cows here. So we don't have that outlet. We do ship it south to a farmer in Washington State who takes it. But because of the nature of it, we have to dry it first because it goes really sour and it's really heavy. There's a lot of water in it. So we dry it to keep it stable and to be able to afford to ship it south. Well, that process consumes a lot of oil, but it's something that we have to do, again, by being in Alaska. Well, a couple years ago, we finally decided we were at the volume where we could justify looking at using that as a fuel. So instead of sending this stuff south and burning oil to dry it in the first place, now we're going to be burning all of our spent grain to generate heat so that we can dry more spent grain, plus have enough left over to offset more oil use in our brew house. So we're estimating in the first year we'll save about 2/3 of our fuel bill.
Jeez.
So
and
for an industry of our
line.
That's just coming
online,
okay. Right? We're in commissioning phase right now. It's been in construction since November, and toward the end of the year we'll have it up and running full-time. We're still testing it right now. So we're real excited about that, and not to push on a theme, but we're the first brewery in the country to do that too. Possibly in the world, because it's actually a patent pending process, the entire start to finish of how we do this. And in that process, we had to figure out, is anybody else doing this? Well, turns out there's no other brewery in the world, as far as we can tell, that is using spent grain to completely fuel a energy recovery process.
Okay, so most of them are giving it to farmers locally in Europe, too.
It's an easy way to get rid of it. There have been a few large brewing companies that have tried to use it as a fuel in addition to other stuff, but it burns kind of funny. So our last 15 years of experience with burning this stuff have really taught us a lot, and so we were able to figure out a technology in conjunction with a few manufacturing technology partners to get the process working. So I'm very excited about that.
I imagine you guys are going to be asked to talk about this technology to other companies or breweries.
I'm sure we will.
If you're the first
in
the world.
It's one of those interesting things. We want to share our excitement with other breweries in our field. You know, it's a very collegial atmosphere in craft breweries. Up to a point. Well, I don't want to give away all of our secrets. It's exciting technology that a lot of companies could benefit from.
Yeah.
And, you know, displacing fossil fuel use, who can't support that?
It's a win for everybody. It's a win for our environment and carbon emissions decreasing. So. Great. Now, there's also another piece of the social responsibility, which is this coastal code that you're involved with. Ashley, do you want to explain a little bit about what that is?
Yes, I'd love to. The coastal code is actually the second half of it. It's an acronym, CODE, Clean Oceans Depend on Everyone. So here in Juneau, we're basically right where the mountains touch the water, and so much of what we do as Junoites is water-based. And that's true of the founders of our company and those of us that work there. So in 2007, when we came out with our Alaskan IPA, we knew we wanted to basically release a product with a cause. And so we had, you know, internal focus groups. We really thought about, like, what did we want to benefit? And in our backyard, the ocean is kind of where we all landed on. So we founded the Coastal Code, which is a two-part project. 1% of proceeds from all of our Alaskan IPA are donated directly to the Coastal Code Fund. So the one part is a grant funding organization where we have quarterly grant cycles, and nonprofit groups can submit a grant application to receive funds for beach cleanups and water quality research. And, you know, we've done some really interesting things with, like, derelict crab pot removal, but basically get out and clean up our oceans. It's not just limited to Alaska, though a lot of our grantees are based in Alaska, but we've done cleanups all the way down the Pacific coast.
Mm-hmm.
And some actually a little bit inland, because in watersheds and streams, because basically it all leads to the ocean, so it's all connected. Which has been really fun. I'm on the board for the Coastal Code, so we get to read all the grant applications It's all internally based, so, you know, we have someone from our quality assurance lab and accounting and our maintenance department, and so we have a wide range of discussions about these applications. The other part of that is just awareness. Clean oceans depend on everyone, and every little you know, daily habit can really influence your impact on the oceans and beyond. Plastics pollution is a big focus of ours, and ways to cut down on that, and just, you know, small things that we've all heard before, but it doesn't hurt to say them again, like bringing your own bags to the grocery store and eating sustainable seafood and all of that. So, yeah, it's a really fun part of what we do.
Wow. And have you seen the applications go up in the past years as more and more people become aware?
We have. Yeah. It hasn't skyrocketed or anything. when we founded it, we intentionally created it to be a separate entity from the brewery. So we don't market it really closely to our beer product because we wanted it to have legitimacy as a ocean health nonprofit. But anyway, yes, they have definitely increased, and it's been a lot of fun.
Wow. And do you have any other partners outside of Alaska maybe? You know, there's so many different groups that work with plastics and ocean. Maybe they've looked at you guys to collaborate.
For awareness?
Yeah.
Save
the Waves, Washed Ashore Project down in Oregon.
We worked with Solve, who isn't necessarily ocean-based, but they do a lot of, they have two large beach cleanups every year that we have been a big partner with. We've worked with some regional surf rider groups and Heal the Bay and some other
surf riders.
Regional ocean health nonprofits, which is great. There's a lot of people out there doing good work.
Yeah. You guys are too. Now, was there any other piece of the sustainability, Brandon? Is there something else in the future that will come on board? Is this kind of the limit to the technology you're going to bring in? Or?
You know, I like to think that we've gotten the low-hanging fruit, but there always seems to be something new that pops up. We're definitely focusing on just how we can be more efficient with what we do. Again, going back to the first bit of the three-word mantra, reduce, reuse, recycle, is reduce. And the less we can use to make the same product and even make it better, the better off everybody is. So we're always looking at a lot of energy efficiency improvements in our process and ways that we can get more out of our raw materials and things like that. So that's not to say we're not going to find some real big project in the future, but I'm thinking we've probably hit the big ones already.
I would say when I started the mash press was just coming on, and this whole biomass concept was kind of this like, oh, wouldn't that be cool? But like, never did we think it would. I guess I
turned out it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it seems to work. So, yeah.
Wow. Now, before we go on to kind of the next little part of the interview, you guys have social media. You're kind of out there. Well, let's just give the listeners your information.
Sure. Well, our home base is our website. It's alaskanbeer.com. There's an N at the end of Alaskan. And then we have a really fun Facebook page. It's facebook.com/AlaskanBrewingCo, C-O. And then from there you can find our regional pages. We have a Facebook for some of our different states down south. And then our Twitter is at twitter.com/AlaskanBrewing.
Thanks, Ashley. And if you're just tuning in, Ashley Johnston is Communications Manager at Alaskan Brewing, and Brendan Smith is Brewing Operations Manager at Alaskan Brewing. This is Alaska Identity Project. Now, I received a comment from my listener that said, I'm a longtime fan and didn't realize that they were based, or Alaskan Brewing was based out of Southeast Alaska. Her husband, Matt, has worn his Alaskan Brewing Company shirt to rags and is still wearing it. She says, if you can get some free stuff, that would be awesome. Matt will continue to do some East Coast advertising for you. Wish we could get their beer over here on the East Coast in North Carolina, but I understand that would make it the most expensive beer ever by the time it was shipped over there. So you have fans all over the place.
That's wonderful.
Sounds like. What has been the evolution of some of the products, Ashley? I know you guys have a ton of different beers that have each year coming on board. You now have a Perseverance one that came out.
Sure. It all started with our Alaskan Amber, which is based on a Gold Rush era recipe from a brewery here in the Juneau area from 1907. That was definitely the first one that really put Alaskan on the map. Then we brought on our Pale Ale, which is paler in color, but it's a golden ale, which just won a silver medal at the Great American Beer Festival, which is the world's largest commercial beer festival. We're pretty excited about that. Our smoke porter won as well. And our smoke porter is actually the most award-winning beer at that festival, or I should say award-winning craft beer. And then we kind of very consciously and kind of slowly brought on new styles, our oatmeal stout, our seasonal summer and winter ale, and then the IPA in 2007 and our white ale in 2009. But we've been doing some really fun things lately with our pilot series.
Okay.
It's a limited edition quarterly release that we change every quarter. So it gives our brewers an opportunity to really experiment with different ingredients and styles and alcohol content. And we've put out everything from a raspberry wheat, which has done really well. I think we sold out at our brewery in less than 5 hours this year.
No way.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Wow.
It was fun. To our Perseverance Ale, which was actually a Russian Imperial Stout brewed with birch syrup from Wasilla, fireweed honey from Delta Junction, brown sugar, oats, and alder smoked malt that we smoke in-house. It's just, we kind of wanted to really create this beautiful flavor of Alaska that could be both be enjoyed fresh, but then also cellared and to be brought back for vintage tastings.
Wow.
That's been doing really well.
So the brewers must have an exciting job. I mean, that must be fun to experiment.
Well, you know, that's one of the neat things about the company is it's not just the brewers.
Okay.
We have a really good what we call our rough draft program, which in a nutshell, pretty much anyone in the company can participate in, and most people do. We're a lot of beer geeks there. Most of us a lot of us are certified beer judges, even accountants.
Beer judges.
Mm-hmm. So we really like beer, and our rough draft program allows any employee to come to the rough draft committee and suggest, hey, I want to do this.
Really?
I have this idea. Usually, if they're not a brewer, they have to pair with a brewer to actually get it done. We have a small pilot system that we do. And that's where a lot of our new ideas come from, is from directly from our employees. We don't have just, Jeff Larson doesn't just sit there and say, I want to make this.
Yeah.
It comes from organically from the ground up. And so it's very exciting. So, yeah, our brewers do have a lot of fun because they're the ones that eventually get to make on a larger scale all these crazy ideas, but we all come up with it together.
Huh.
And I will say it's not just the employees. We get to experiment, and they go on to our break room taps. And then if it does well in the break room, that's a good chance we'll scale it up to our rough draft system, which is 10 barrels. But we put it on tap around Juno, and we really appreciate input from Junoites.
Right.
We think we've developed some pretty elevated beer palates and
like ambassadors or official tasters that give you feedback. How fun. Wow. Now, you market it around outside of Alaska, right? How has that evolved, Ashley, from being just sold in Alaska to other states? And what's been the most recent state you've gone to?
Sure. Well, when they started, they really thought that it would just be Juno's neighborhood brewery, and then there was a lot of demand up north because there wasn't any craft beer up there either. So that was the first step. But then a lot of the local fishermen that wintered in Seattle were bringing it down with them. we had a really strong demand in the Seattle area. And so finally they kind of caved and decided to expand and distribute to Washington. We've been there for quite a while, but we've had really strong, solid, sustainable, and kind of organic growth. We started in Washington, then moved to Oregon and Idaho, Montana, and stayed in the Pacific Northwest for a long time. We eventually moved to California, over to Arizona and Colorado, and just this year we hopped over to Minnesota, where they've got a lot of beer drinkers, and just last month we moved into Wisconsin, which has been great. So now we're in 12 states total. Which is a very solid business model for us. 12 states in 25 years has been pretty steady. There's some breweries that brew, 5,000 barrels of beer and are in 22 states, but we've chosen a different path.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So you kind of evaluate after you go in each state what the feedback or the uptake of the beer is?
Absolutely, and each state's a little different, but it also has to do with supply chain, obviously, where a very long barge ride away from Seattle, so we have to have a really solid supply chain plan before we can move into a new state.
And what's the future? What are the next few states?
Well,
people say, hey, I want it out here like this girl from North Carolina.
Yeah, yeah, I get the pleasure of answering our info at email address, and we get, dozens of them a day, which is fun. It's kind of, sorry, we're not coming, but still fun to see it. But So we hopped over to Minnesota and Wisconsin, so we've got to go back and get the Dakotas.
Oh, okay.
We skipped over them.
Not as many people in those
get left behind.
Yeah. And then we get a lot of emails from Texas. So we're looking at Texas, but we're not really sure when that'll be.
Texas. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, the second biggest state in the United States. twice smaller. Mm-hmm. Well, what is your guys' favorite beer? Do you have a favorite that you like to...
This time of year, I drink a lot of winter ale.
I do, too. Oh,
in the winter, really. Mm-hmm. You change your taste buds.
Yep. And in the summer, I just drink a lot of everything.
Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say a lot. That makes me sound like a lot, doesn't it?
Well, it's okay. You work at a brewery.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think winter ale, I definitely take advantage of having that seasonal around. And summertime, I drink a lot of pale ale. It's a classic. It's a great beer to just have in your refrigerator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, are there other breweries that exist in Alaska? How has that been? Have you seen other competition out there in the past few years?
There are, I don't know if we've passed 20 yet, but we're hovering right around 20 brew pub, okay. You know, small breweries in Alaska. Stretch from, you know, Fox outside of Fairbanks all the way, you know, down to Sitka and Haines and some really small but really quality beers out there, which is great, especially at some of the bigger festivals. Because unlike a lot of beer, regional beer industries, we don't get to see them very often, even though they're part of our state. And as Brandon mentioned, it's a very collegial industry. So it's great to get together and sample beers and see what everybody's doing.
Nice. Now, I understand the pictures on the cans or the bottles come from local artists, a friend of mine said, that's my boat on that label, on one of the labels. Will is his name.
Yeah, Will Metcalf.
Yes.
The Caribou. Uh-huh. That was Marcy and Jeff used to live on a boat, and I think his boat was docked nearby, and so when they developed their label, they used his as a model for that Alaskan Amber. And they've had several iterations, but the most recent iteration of our labels is done by John Farringer, who's a local artist, famous for his kind of watercolor style Alaska settings.
Yeah. John Farringer, I'll have to look him up. I'm going to have Ray Troll on in the next couple of weeks.
Nice.
He's on the 27th on the radio. It'll be a good interview. Now, with this great Alaskan seafood down here in Southeast, especially, you guys also have recipes. Or, you know, I had Tyson Vick on one time from Alaska Seafood, and it's amazing how that Cook It Frozen app has spread amongst my friends. And I'm sure you've talked with them or worked with them on recipes. So what are a couple that might be fun with your beer?
On our website, we have a database of hundreds of beer of recipes made with beer. They're all specifically reference our beer, but you can mix and match and with whatever you have in your fridge. So we have a cooking with beer section, and but salmon and Alaskan amber go really beautifully together. There's a couple wonderful salmon glaze recipes, and then smoked porter, which is brewed with alder smoked malt and has a so there's a lot of flavor association with smoked salmon, is a great beer to use in heartier chilies and stews and anything. You know, just take your normal stew recipe and throw it in, and it just adds this kind of meaty, smoky character.
Oh, wow. Brian, any favorites?
You know, I'm always excited to see the new recipes that come out at our annual investor and employee potluck, which is basically a cooking with beer competition.
Really? When is
that? That's usually in early November.
This year it's November 5th.
Right, oh,
okay.
Right. So unfortunately not open to the public, so it is a bit of a shame for me to mention it. But so we see a lot of interesting things come out, you know, things that you go from the normal, you know, stews and things like that to, whoa, I didn't know you could do that with
like
beer.
Brandon, so, what did you make last year?
Oh, you want me to describe it? We called it the sixth deadly sin, which, for those of you listening at home, is gluttony. we made peanut butter candies, which are the things you make with peanut butter and confectioner sugar. Put some fried bacon inside the peanut butter candy, and then you coat that with chocolate, and then we wrapped that in prosciutto, and then beer battered and fried it.
Wow, did that win?
They were up there.
Amazingly, no.
No? somebody better than
honorable
you.
Mention it got, but I think it was maybe over the top for some of the judges.
Okay.
Sure.
We actually have local chefs come in, and I think it might have been a fan favorite, but yeah.
Wow. Yum, I'll have to try that. So we're almost out of time here, but Do you guys think people in Alaska, Juneauites, Alaskans are proud of and they identify with Alaskan brewing?
I think they do. I hope that a lot of people see us as a local success story, and I think a lot of that is because we're not just a company that happens to be in Juneau. We're part of Juneau.
Yeah.
You know, everybody who works at the brewery obviously lives here. We have family here. We've asked for and received the support of the community over the last 25 years. So the community has been very generous to us, and we want to be a good local corporate citizen. We want to give back to our community. So I think it's definitely been a great two-way street, and I hope we can continue another 25 years in the same way and keep growing and keep serving the community well.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Ashley.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's really fun for those of us, you know, when we go down south to see the Alaskan brand, you know, to wear that shirt and see it on the shelf and know that it came from where we live. So I think Alaskans have, or we hope Alaskans have a lot of pride in it. I know we do, and we're proud to be here.
Yeah. And if you're out there and you're proud, too, you can go by and buy some gear. I know I like going to your store there downtown. It's got all kinds of fun, cute outfits and stuff. And, again, let's repeat the information. It's alaskanbeer.com.
That's right. Yep. Or facebook.com/AlaskanBrewingCo or twitter.com/AlaskanBrewing.
Great. So check out everything online there. Thanks again. Ashley Johnston is Communications Manager. Brandon Smith, Brewing Operations Manager at Alaskan Brewing Company here in Juneau, Alaska. I'll be back after this music break with Deb Spencer, who's owner of Crosstown Seafoods and Scow Girls. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Alaska Identity Project. This is Adrian Lopez here on KTO News Juneau in Alaska's capital city, broadcasting on 104.3. The music tonight is by Doug Adams, and that song was Horse Sense off his CD Guitar Solos. We are back. In the first half hour, we were talking with Ashley Johnston, the communications manager, and Brandon Smith, brewing operations manager at Alaskan Brewing Company here in Juneau, Alaska. They had a great interview, and thanks to them for coming in tonight and chatting with us about some very interesting operations out there. Wish they would have brought some beer. No. Next up tonight, we're talking with Deb Spencer, who's actually calling in here on the show. She's owner of Crosstown Seafoods and Scow Girls, which is an all-female floating fish operation in Portland, Alaska. The Scow was originally built by the late John Carlson and later acquired by Deb Spencer and Keith Keller. Deb, are you there? listening here to the Alaska Identity Project. This is Adrian Lopez on KTO News in Juneau. Unfortunately, we've had some technical difficulties. We couldn't get our interviewee, Deb Spencer, on the radio here, so we're just going to have to reschedule for next week or a future interview. We'll get Deb back on for sure. Again, for those who didn't hear me, Deb Spencer is owner of Crosstown Seafoods and Scow Girls, which is an all-female floating fish operation near Pelican, Alaska. And it's definitely an exciting interview, and I want to make sure we'll have enough time with Deb in the future. So we're just going to have to reschedule that interview. And thanks again to the Alaska Brewing Company. They were on earlier in the first half hour. To Ashley Johnston, communications manager, and Brandon Smith, who's a brewing operations manager there at Alaskan Brewing. They've got a lot of great sustainability efforts underway and 25-year anniversary, so it's exciting for them. You can find them at alaskanbeer.com as well as on Facebook and Twitter.